Yeah, I was a heavy drinker, but I didn't recognize what the people closest to me recognized. I ended up laying flatlined on a hospital operating table. Somehow the surgeons brought me back to life.
When your life depends on it, there's only one place you can turn. Karen. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.
Don't miss your free chance to tune into Benzinga's very own bootcamp series on November 20th. If you're looking to dive into new concepts and grow your account, this one's for you.
Welcome everyone to Benzinga Cannabis Insider. My name is Javier Jase and I am joined today by the fantastic co-host, Mr. Patrick Lane. Patrick.
What's happening? What's happening, Javi? What's happening, guys? It's always a pleasure to be with you. I love it when Javi lets me come on and say hi. And producer AT, shout out to you. You know, guys, our tour of Planet 13 in Vegas recently has gotten a lot of views. People really like seeing that sort of exclusive access. And just a shout out again to producer AT for being behind the scenes with his camera getup. Smash the like, yeah. Say hi to us. Say hi to producer AT. We appreciate all of you guys. Thanks for being here.
We have a good show today. We have a very good show. We'll go over some news, but today we have Todd Harrison, and it's no secret, top dog of the MSO gang. So start thinking about what you'd want us to ask him and drop it in the comments. Drop a one if you're excited and that's all you want to say. Drop your questions if you have any questions. Drop your comments if you have any comments.
We love it. Javi, what are you looking at today? What are some stories that you're seeing?
The big news of the week is like, you know, GOP lawmakers officially filing this cannabis legalization bill. So Representative Nancy Mace, she's a Republican from South Carolina, laid out her cannabis legalization plan yesterday, titled the States Reform Act and co-sponsored by at least a half dozen Republicans. The idea is to federalize, essentially, right, legalize cannabis in the federal level in a manner that is consistent with the rights of the different states to determine what level of cannabis reform they want or don't want, right? Mm. But interesting stuff in there. One of the most interesting things to me was the excise tax. It's a 3% federal excise tax on products, for cannabis products. These taxes would fund law enforcement and small business programs. And this compares to an excise tax of more than 25%, 25.5% on the bill that was proposed by Chuck Schumer, Cory Booker, and Ron Wyden. So definitely a good selling point there. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, geez, 3% as opposed to 25% is a hell of a difference, right? Especially with where this industry is concerned, where most of the taxes are exorbitantly high on a lot of the product here. I mean, listen, we can point to that all day and just say, wow, there's got to be some way they're going to meet in the middle, right? When I saw the 25% before, it never seemed to me like that's where they'd end up, right? I'd be interested to get Todd's thoughts on that too. But this, I mean, it's fairly standard, right? They want to regulate cannabis like alcohol. It decriminalizes cannabis federally and it defers to state powers, right? You're looking at the continued existence of state medical programs, right? There are things in this bill that you would expect to see in really any cannabis reform as it pertains to that sort of federal picture. And again, we'll get Todd's thoughts here in a second. I don't think this has a chance, right? But I would be interested to see what your thoughts are, what Todd's thoughts are. You guys in the chat, what do you think? A one, if this has a chance, a two, if maybe it doesn't.
For me, it does have legs, but let's see what the chat thinks. real fast, some earnings, a bunch of earnings this week. You know, we heard from Avicanna, from Willow Biosciences, from Oakley, Hemp Fusion, IM Cannabis, Medifarm Labs, CB Sciences, Charlotte's Web, the parent company Schwaz, Verano Holdings, Tilt Holdings, Intercure, Entourage Health, TerraSend, Neptune Wellness, Indiva, MaryMed, and many others. You can go to benzinga.com/cannabis. We have an article for every one of these earnings reports. We break them down for you so you don't have to go to these very long, hard to read filings. They're never fun. We make it easy for you. So the one I really would like to look into real fast and then get to Todd is Trulieve. We're talking about TCNNF. One of the biggest cannabis companies in the world. They reported Q3 revenue up 64% year over year to $224 million, 15 consecutive quarter of profitability. What do you make of these earnings?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited by the growth for Trulieve. I also, it paired with this news out of Slang, and I forget who just dropped it in the chat here. Somebody asked about Slang and Trulieve. John, question, what does today's news on Slang mean? Is Trulieve now backing them with the huge loan, right? Like, I mean, they have a partnership, right? It's sort of a gray area there, given that, mm-hmm. you know, Trulieve and Slang were going to be partnering, I think, in Massachusetts and a couple of other opportunities as well, right? Best of luck to it. Just got to shout out Chris Dreesen, who's leaving Slang, really, really good, solid guy there. And I look forward to seeing what's next for him too. But to get back to TCNNF, I think they're still on solid ground, right? I think that they're still a company that has a lot of upside, you know. And I wonder if where the market is now, it's still a value buy. I don't know. I'd be interested to hear Todd's thoughts on that.
Yeah, let's bring him on, Todd Harrison. He is a partner at CB1 Capital, founder at CB1 Capital, top dog of the MSO gang, as we just said. Todd Harrison, bring him on.
What's up, Todd?
What's up, fellas?
What do you think, man? What do you make of all this stuff? You got a new bill, you got Trulieve, you got Slang, you got all this stuff happening. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I didn't know Chris was leaving. That's he's a good guy. I agree with you. I wish him well.
Yeah.
What's up, Chris? Oh, my gosh. I'm getting – never mind. Hi, this is live, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's good, though, man. It's good.
Got a lot going on over here.
Yeah, no, but it's a lot of news too. Let's talk Slang and Trulieve for a second, right?
Because I'll follow your lead. Go ahead.
No, Slang and Trulieve, right? You see this loan, you see this. You know, it's a nice financing. Ideally, it helps both sides. Ideally, it helps Trulieve with the partnership they've crafted with Slang, right? And the sort of investment that they've made there. Is there anything more? Maybe we should say that. Is there anything more that we should be reading into this?
If you're asking me, I have no clue to that. No insight. I'm not current. I apologize. I can look at many things. That is not one of them right now. I do think Trulieve's quarter was pretty amazing. I applaud him for the work she's done. I think all of the names have done quite well in this sort of transition, normalization, whatever you want to call it, away from the COVID pantry stuffing and in front of the East Coast rollout. And, you know, if there was ever a time for a mulligan for earnings for a couple of quarters, I think now is the time. And we just may be getting it with what's going on with the Mace bill and with SAFE Banking still in play into year end.
So what are you looking at specifically following earnings season, right? Which companies are to you the big winners of this almost over earnings season and some of the bigger losers in the US?
Well, you know, listen, I think you can say something about all of the five letter FANG, you know, to their credit, in navigating their cruise ships through the various canals. I thought Verano's margins were exceptional. I thought that their EBITDA was ridiculous. And I thought, you know, all in all, Green Thumb, amazing. Trulieve, amazing. You know, Cresco, and I'd even put Boris and Cura in there. And I particularly like what he's doing in Europe with the Germany news that's sort of coming. But I think sort of the what we're focusing on right now is just the optionality potentially of SAFE. You know, I could sit here till I'm blue in the face and say, we're focusing on state level fundamentals and continued state rollouts. And next year, we're going to get maybe six states. And the longer it takes, the better it is for the incumbents. But the world is sort of looking to the next step for cannabis, and that's the uplisting side of the conversation, the institutional migration. And it's interesting to see, you know, my friend who manages a lot more than I asked him yesterday, what are you thinking? He said, you know, sell the news, but the seal has been broken. And sure enough, you know, we look today at MSOS, which is that U.S. cannabis ETF mm-hmm. that we advise. You know, you look at the top holder and it's Ricky Sandler at Eminence. You know, I mean, and these kind of guys, these guys don't usually run alone, if you know what I'm talking about. So I think it's all starting. I think all of this price action the last couple of days is, I dare I say, healthy consolidation. But we do think the low is in. We think that the specter of GOP playing ball changes the calculus into 2022 in the midterms. And then you have on top of that, you know, a lot of the longs have sold, harvesting their losses. It was the only sector that was red this year. And then you have a lot of shorts that were pressing. So probably active this time of year. There's a lot of animal spirits. It's the only sector sort of left for dead. And ironically, it's one that has a real genuine fundamental bull case. And we think it gets re-rated over the next, you know, next year, call it.
Yeah, well, there's a question in the chat here, Todd. It's the very first one, Aaron, if you want to highlight it. RRSP, if SAFE Act passes, what kind of multiple does he, and he being you, Todd, see for MSOS, right, or MSOs in general? I wonder, you know, with SAFE, with MACE, obviously there's opportunity here. And I hate to ask you to pull out your crystal ball and talk timing, but, you know.
SAFE goes through. I mean, I you put a gun to my head and you know, we have enough paper in the near term to position that way. But it's still the minority view. There's a lot of people who are calling me like, listen, it's not in there. Like, no, we don't expect it to be in the Senate version. We never did. And even I think Perlmutter came out and said it's during the conference that if they, you know, defer to the House version of the NDAA, they need 60 votes. And according to my friend Brady Cobb, who deserves all the credit and the blame, mm-hmm. is they have 18.
Poor Brady.
They have 18. Excuse me, you should get him on the show. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. That's really the call option to the thesis, right? The thesis is continued. The fundamentals are terrific. The states are continuing. In a post-COVID world, we need the jobs. We need the tax revenue. Certainly don't need the criminal justice. And all of it should coalesce. I don't know if the MACE bill is, you know, it's certain. I mean, it's really pretty moderate, right? It's sense of moderate, common sense from the GOP. Mm-hmm. There's enough there to build something, but it's going to take time. It's not that in and of itself doesn't move the needle, I don't think, but the calculus behind the GOP now playing ball into the midterms is different than the market had made. That's a different assumption than the market had made. And therein lies the potential for an offsize into year end, particularly if you get SAFE. But that's, again, that's a bit of a gamble here. Although, you know, we think it gets through.
Talking a little bit about policy and gambling, you mentioned we'll probably get six states in 2022. What you talking about? What? Give us a little bit insight into that, please.
Well, it's the East Coast rollout. I mean, I think New Jersey, Connecticut, New York is sort of the trifecta that will play out. I think Jersey is Q1. I think I'm guessing on all of this. Nobody knows. Which is part of sort of that mulligan you need for earnings, because a lot of these operators, you know, it's hard to make revenue assumptions based on when New Jersey is going to come on, or based on when New York or Connecticut is going to come on. But once they come on, that's, you know, you're talking about a whole different level of growth. I can't name off the top of my head. New Jersey, Connecticut, New York, what is it, Virginia? I'm not prepared. I apologize. I'll ask Tommy Angel. Tommy Angel will tell me.
No worries, man. I think that's enough to go on. And I think that there's clear momentum here again.
Pennsylvania's in the mix. Exactly. Florida's in the mix. Ohio's in the mix. Whether or not that's next year or the year after, I don't know. Like, unless you own options, you care. But if you own the equities, you're just, you know, you're getting paid, you know, for, you know, I think in really cheap paper here, you're getting paid to wait. Because the longer it takes, the better it is for these underlying companies. If you want options, you obviously are looking for a trigger like a Safe Bank, a Spark in the dark. We're both right now. We have a trade and we have our investment. So we're sort of, we have the Japanese arbitrage or the Texas hedge, however you want to call it.
Very cool. Now, are there any specific markets that you're looking at where you're saying, all right, and any of them, right? Whether it's New York, Pennsylvania, Jersey, any of them that are either online or coming online soon that you're like, this is the catalyst. This is the one.
Yeah. I mean, they're all massive opportunities. And I don't think anybody's sitting here and saying that these, you know, these moats or these margins are going to last forever. Certainly, I think, you know, any reasonable observer of the cannabis industry knows interstate commerce is coming and knows that the margins are going to come down and knows that over time, you know, there's going to become less barriers to entry, but that's going to take time. And during that time, there's going to be great brands and enterprises that are built before CPG and the rest of them come in to bum rush the space because they're out there. We talk to them. And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out over the next couple of months in large part because of the Safe optionality. And it'll be interesting to see, it's now November 16th. We understand that probably the week after Thanksgiving is when the conference will start. So into December. So it still has an opportunity to be a pretty interesting holiday season for U.S. cannabis. Again, a sector that was left for dead for the better part of this year.
Yeah, no kidding.
Now, talking U.S. cannabis, right? You're a big proponent of this thing that they call, on Twitter at least, they call MSO gang, right? You're very bullish on U.S. operators. Why are you so bullish on U.S. operators? And how do you feel about Canadian stocks, right? Because that's the, it seems like the almost eternal debate where most
they're mutually exclusive, right? There has to be anger and like intensity, and I'm a big fan of avoiding the red zones on both sides politically. I think that the red zones are dangerous, and in terms of U.S. versus Canada, there's great opportunities, I think, on both sides of the border. We just happen to look at the U.S. opportunity because of the way the regulatory construct is. You have these companies that are listed on the pink sheets and on the Canadian Stock Exchange, and they're trading. It's like having private equity that's sort of traded, sort of listed, but it gets bastardized a lot. It gets pushed around by a lot of pernicious algos and naked shorts and dark pools. And I know there's different thoughts about that, but it's definitely in play. I've been doing this for a long time. And now you have a situation where you have a U.S. industry with a much larger addressable market. And a lot more flexibility. I mean, it's the United States. You have the California incubation side, you have the whole U.S. Eastern Seaboard coming online, and everything in the middle, Florida, and this is just on the 2.0 on the consumer side. The 3.0 on the efficacy side, I think, is going to knock everybody's socks off when we start to really get into the plant and the science and the efficacy and the therapeutic benefits and all of that. But this is just on the CPG side I'm talking, and the institutional migration in this space. A lot of people who read and watch, they want to make money, right? They want to be positioned. And certainly, hasn't been easy, but you could argue that this is still the easy trade for U.S. cannabis, because once these names onboard and once the institutions come on board and the banks take over, it's going to change the complex and the dynamic of the cannabis space from this cottage industry to an industrial complex. It's going to be different. Make money, but it's going to be different. And all of it, right? And then there's the whole social justice piece and making sure that, piece is in place and getting people out of jail and making this more than about the trade, but this is your audience. So we'll try to keep it, germane to that.
So one other question that's somewhat similar to that, when it comes to markets like California, right? California is huge market. It's insane. There's no one that's really winning California yet, right? When it comes to, I don't know, I could make the argument, but I'd love to know your thoughts. So many people that we talk to, right, are talking about the pricing issues there and what that's doing to the overall market structure. Any thoughts on that? And if we solve that problem soon, or if that's something that continues to plague us a little bit longer?
Yeah, I mean, Cali is going to be a monster. It is a monster. It's just, in these states that don't have limited licenses, they tend to you know, go through their own cycles. We saw it in Oregon. We saw it in Colorado. You know, we work with Glasshouse. You know, we own Glasshouse. We think that they are, you know, extremely well positioned. They have great jockeys, and we're big fans. But even, you know, as they'll tell you, and we'll tell them, and they'll tell us, it's going to take a minute. It's going to take some time to cycle through California. You know, and then you look at companies like Forefront. Ironically, we also represent them, but I bring them up because, you know, they just built a monster facility out in Commerce that is really, you know, if you understand the supply chain and for 2.0, the notion of cannabis as an ingredient, you're like, okay, if your input costs are going down, your margins are improving. It's accretive, right? So for that end of the supply chain, for someone like a Forefront, you could argue that the California glut in biomass is actually quite bullish. So, I mean, there's different nuances here, but California writ large is a monster, and it's going to continue to be a monster and eventually probably help to feed the rest of the country. And that gets into an interstate commerce conversation, which we think, again, is inevitable. But there's a pretty wide range of opinions on when exactly that would come into play.
How do you feel about other international markets, right? You say California is a monster, right? Do you see any international markets also emerging as monsters? And as a follow-up, do you see any U.S. companies especially well-positioned to capitalize on this international opportunity? Maybe, of course, you know, we think of Curaleaf and Emek, but like what else is there and what are you seeing?
Well, I mean, listen, cannabis has been around for, what is it, 30,000 years, 10,000 years as medicine across most cultures and societies. So it's very much, the prohibition is very much the exception rather than the rule. So, you know, I mean, with the exception of perhaps the Far East, you know, but even that in time, because it's just approaching it through a different lens. I mean, Farmacielo is built, you know, they're down in Colombia, and I think they're going to help to feed the European continent. I think Boris on the U.S. side with Curaleaf is particularly well positioned to, and I think he, you know, I think it was very smart. It's his backyard, right? I mean, he's got a competitive advantage in Europe that most other MSOs don't have, at least now. Now you can't buy your way in, but he knows his way around. And I think that, you know, that's what makes that a smart transaction. But I think all of the MSOs, like when you look at sort of what they're doing and how they're doing it, it's an adaptation of a similar story, but ultimately it's the same story of a new consumer products group. And mm-hmm. that's going to emerge into an asset class for conventional money managers. And there is only, you know, so many right now, even across the tiers, tier one, tier through tier four. And certainly if something like Safe goes, the tier three, tier four are going to have much better beta to the upside because, you know, they would proportionately benefit more than the big boys who are going to do well no matter what. But that's just that segment on the MSOs. There's a lot of, as you know, there's a lot of ancillaries and there's a lot of different parts. But, you know, globally, I mean, you look at Israel and what they're doing, it's a matter of time. We're focused, again, on the U.S. most in terms of our risk profile because of what we think is the ARB on top of the ARB, right? Like we're buying growth companies at value multiples. But if we get this re-rating with federal, even if it's just that bank, the safe banking as it is now, that doesn't have any bells and whistles on it, but does trigger that FinCEN and AML guidance, which would have paved the way to an uplisting. So if that does play through, we would think that the hedge funds would front run the institutions into U.S. cannabis. That's why the volume matters to us. That's why Eminence is the top holder and MSOS matters to us. Because if it is in fact true that the seal has been broken, this is the process now where the hedge funds front run the institutions and potentially just take this trade to re-rate the trade before it gets to the New York Stock Exchange.
Wow. That's incredible insight, man, especially as to what might play out here. When it comes to, I mean, you mentioned this a couple of times, so I just want to double back to it. Interstate commerce, right? As these investors are looking at these stocks and trying to look at who's positioned where, and as something like Safe passes, how it affects some of these companies and their competitive advantages in some of these markets, right? What should they be looking at? What specifically, if anything, can you tell them about, all right, this is how it might affect you or not in terms of your bets on some of these operators?
Well, it's tough, and I think a big reason why some of the bigger institutions are holding off, and there's other reasons, right? They, you know, for the CPG companies, they don't want the 280E brush anywhere near the rest of their franchise, and for the big money managers, they don't want to put the rest of their franchise at risk for a sleeve of capital for cannabis, right? It's not the, sure, the worth it meter's not there. Ultimately, what makes it hard for the big money to come in is we still don't know what it's going to look like. What's the legislation ultimately going to look like? Because it has very meaningful, obviously, implications for where we go from here. But what I can tell you from talking to people who I consider to be very smart, and of course, where you stand is a function of where you sit. Most of these people sit at, you know, at the corner table of their respective cannabis companies. The ROI on these investments are turning over pretty rapidly. Like by this time next year, year and a half, you're making big time money on those investments. And if you have to monetize those down the road, you're going to make money on that as well as you have to shift to acclimate to whatever the framework's going to be. We don't think the FDA is going to be onerous for the same reason we think safe banking is going to happen, because the more onerous the FDA or the more onerous financial conditions, the more disproportionately impactful that is for small business and social justice applicants, right? That's the truth. It'll probably FDA ultimately, we think, labels and claims versus more like a big pharma. But again, we don't know. What we're presuming is that by the time this comes to pass, the states are going to be making so much money through taxes and having so many jobs for their constituents that they're going to fight for their rights and for those companies. And it's going to evolve. Yeah. If there is interstate, and there will be, it'll be phased in to allow these companies to divest and do things that they need to do to keep the gravy train of tax revenue, to keep the job creation going, and to really ultimately, hopefully, fold in that whole social and criminal justice initiative, which we think could happen. Like I always say, it took Connecticut 5 years to legalize. It's not going to take 50 Connecticuts a year and a half to get it done. But I think the big news over the last couple of weeks is that the GOP is now willing to play ball. And that's a big change.
Huge.
Exciting. Exciting stuff, man.
A lot to unpack here, though. Yeah, but talking about CPG real quick, last week I spoke with Willow. Irwin Naturals. It's a huge supplements, you know, herbal supplements company. The announcer getting into THC and psychedelics. I don't know, just interesting to see more of these bigger brands use their flagship brand to get behind products that are still considered fairly illegal, I believe. But moving on a little bit, but you know, you mentioned ancillaries, right? You're the MSO gang guy. Are you looking at ancillaries at all? What kind of ancillary companies appeal to you? What kind of potential do you see in that space?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, certainly, you know, we can look at the names like AgriFi. Like we built an AgriFi position around 16 or so, and just getting to know them a little bit. We look at this also as proxy plays for the institutional money managers that can't touch the plant touching MSOs, or don't maybe know about the MSOS as a proxy. A good half dozen that would fall within that group, I would say, that we're just starting to get to know, like Hydrofarm, the GrowGens, those types of things. Obviously, GrowGen had a huge move, Hydrofarm too, and they've come back. But I think the market sort of took their pound of flesh back from the ancillaries. So those are pretty good vehicles. but you know, ultimately, would love to find a good laboratory company, like as a picks and shovels play, because ultimately everything's going to have to be certified. But these are, you know, not public stocks yet. We're not there yet. There's some, but they're not pure plays. There's others. Philo, is it Philo? Philo. It's Philo. I always do that.
Philo.
We've been investing in Philo, which is, you know, a technology side of the equation for a couple of years now, and they've been doing great. So that, you know, that's another area to look at. Because data and information is, you know, what makes the world go round, and this is a very affluent demographic. It's a very, everybody's waiting to get in. And when they get in, it's going to be a buy build across, I think, the different components, because, you know, cannabis, for all we, you know, the nice laid back culture, it's a hard business. It's hard. The supply chain is hard. You know, the state framework is hard. Understanding right. the different pieces is hard. You know, I have two 17-year-olds, or about to be 18, and I tell them, like, learn the science, follow the science. Like, you'll be prepared for life, but they don't care.
They will.
They don't want to know.
Follow the science. Good tips. Todd, no, this has been great, man. I really appreciate it. We're coming up on it. Anything else that you want to leave our audience with?
Do we have time for a quick question from the chat? It's a spicy one, too.
Spicy. Todd likes spicy.
From Matt Schiff. Is there any limit to the swaps MSOs can keep adding to new shares being created? Noticing a bit of cash piling up. Spencer doubles down on the question. There's debate on Twitter.
I know there is. I had a guy who.
Are you on Twitter? I never seen you on Twitter before.
I had somebody yell at me, call me right before I got on here, screaming at me about why, you know, a certain stock wasn't bought in MSOS. I said, that's not my bag, baby. That's Dan's domain. You know, I defer to Dan. Noah's great on the questions. I'll tell you this, in terms of transparency and being quick to the answer, ask Noah. I don't believe there's any restrictions. I actually asked the question on Sunday night. I said, do you remember that commercial where like they're selling widgets? I forgot what it was. And they sold their first one and then the second one and then five, and they're all high five and then 10, 20. By the time we got to 100, 1,000, they're looking at each other like, what the fuck do we do now? And I'm like, and I said, what happens if you get 10 billion of inflows? Like, you know, and the response back was, well, if it was right here, it might be problematic, but presumably by that time, the market cap of the whole space would be proportionately higher. And there's no, you know, limit per se that would get in the way structurally. But I'm cuffing that. That's more of an answer for Noah and Dan, my friends over there.
Great team over there. We know.
Don't yell at me about that, because it's not. I have no insight to what he buys or when he buys it. It's not. It's not like that. You know, we share our research. We talk about what we see, and and it's a lot about the jockeys at this stage of the cycle, or maybe not this stage, but it's going to be about the jockeys in terms of taking it to the next stage, because not all cannabis companies are created equal. But I do think that the companies in MSOS, you know, that's a good representation of the U.S. cannabis landscape. And yes, we do advise them. Yes, we have a big position, but I think it's going to work out.
Love it.
Awesome. I mean, that couldn't have ended it better, I don't think. What do you think, Javi?
Well, it could have, with Safe Banking and MSOS over 40 by year end, then that'll be good. Otherwise, it's good knowing you fellas.
Yeah, no, I hear that. We all want it to happen, man.
They'll hunt me down. They'll eat my dog.
Poor Sandy. No.
Yeah,
Todd's got a great dog, you guys. Normally we see the dog. The dog's not there right now.
We got a lot going on today. So
she'll be there.
Oh yeah. She's only here on green days.
All right, man. Well, listen, I really appreciate you coming on. Todd Harrison, founding partner and CIO of CB1 Capital. Always a pleasure, man. We should have you on more.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it, guys. Have a good night.
All right, take care. Javi, I love that one. That was really cool.
Well, if any of you still have questions about what we discussed, drop them in the chat or just like drop them in Twitter. I'm sure our co-host Elliot Lane will look into some of these questions tomorrow at Cannabis Daily. Are you not subscribed to Cannabis Daily already? What do you think?
You have to. Elliot goes through all the major storylines first thing in the morning as you're getting up and starting your trades. So
exactly.
In.
All the marijuana money news in one place every morning with Elliot Lane. Good show today, man. Any other news that you want to shout out real quick?
No, I will say this just as a recap. You know, I think it was really interesting to hear Todd talk about the different policy things that are in play, right? I think obviously we're all thinking about that, but it's been a whirlwind of a year for this industry, right? The stocks have been, you know, and him talking about the, you know, in his words, the pound of flesh that was taken from GrowGen and some of these other ancillary stocks that were really leading the charge up the charts for a while there, has been interesting. And I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it sounded like he said that now we've kind of hit the floor there, right? That he expects them to now rally and return to form, which I think is interesting.
We're not saying we're not recommending anything, but yeah. We just heard buy the dip.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you take nothing else from it, I think it's interesting to look at these different sectors and understand, all right, what are the catalysts? And it sounds like the market's done what we thought it might, and maybe now we'll be positioned better if all goes as we want it to over the next month.
Well, there was a lot of information to unpack on today's show, so make sure to rewatch it on Benzinga's YouTube channel. And tomorrow, go to benzinga.com/cannabis, the one that was just there right now. There you go. We'll probably have a recap of this. You know, there's just too much information for anyone to process and retain with 1, 2, or 3 times watching this episode. So there you go.
Do your thing. Javi, always a pleasure, man.
You too. See you on Thursday for Benzinga Cannabis Hour, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific time. Don't miss it.
Don't miss it. See you later, guys.
Did you know nearly all stock price changes of 10% or more result from a single news headline? That's right. News headlines have a unique ability to drive stock prices up or down. These news catalysts create trading opportunities every day. All you need is a little help to reach out and take them. And if you're looking to grow your portfolio, it doesn't matter if your investment budget is small or big. An easy-to-read stream of news headlines will increase your opportunities to profit from price changes in the stock market, consolidate a knowledge-based investment strategy, and grow your portfolio. All you need is Benzinga Pro and its powerful news alerts, price tracking, and portfolio monitoring to make a positive change in your trading performance. We've already helped thousands of retail traders across the world, and they could not be happier. Increase your market knowledge, boost your exposure to big movers, and make informed trades before major price changes. The opportunities are all around you. Subscribe now, and we'll skyrocket your portfolio today.
Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say it's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, Geico makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.